knew that was coming. Oh, wait. All right. Water.
Thank you.
All right. Hi, I'm Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, everybody. This is awesome. Thank you. I just found out Matt is a grand sponsee of mine. No? I'm like, okay. Welcome. Wow. Okay. I'm really overwhelmed already. I've been here since about 2:30 because I wanted to be ready. No. I got here early because I wanted to. I do things slower these days. You know, like I give myself more time. I'm also an ex-tweaker, so you understand fast. I want to thank the committee, Augie, and particularly Don, who's getting ready for his show. Her show. I mean, Don's been amazing. Everybody since I walked onto this beautiful landscape, I've never been to Laguna Beach. I live in Los Angeles for like 12 years. I've never been here. And driving into the city, or into this, is it a town? Do we call it a town? Okay. Driving in, at the very first time, I'm at a stoplight, right? And right in front of me is a car with it's an advertising car, and the back of it says, recoverytv.com. I was like, wow. That's cool. So, anyway, I'm everything from the hospitality basket was ridiculous. I'm still going through it. It's like, it's packed with stuff, and it's just amazing. I've never been in this position where I am today. You know, in sobriety, we get to do things for the first time on a regular basis. I've never been asked to speak at a convention, and so this is a first for me. So you're going to experience walking through it with me, if you will. Or just tune me out, and I'll see you at the show in an hour and a half. Whatever you need to do, I don't care. All right, so I'm here. Oh, my sobriety birthday, how about that, is April 28th, 1993. So yesterday I turned 18 years sober. And that was awesome. Thank you. And thank you for that, because if there's anything, if you get nothing from me at all tonight, just get that this is a we program. It's the first word of the first step. And that much information changed my life completely, because where I come from, like, you know, I'm going to skip around, but who cares. I got sober in Ottumwa, Iowa. Ottumwa, where Radar was from. Yeah, that's right. Good call. Before I forget, I also want to thank my friends from LA who came all the way here during rush hour to get here. They all had jobs, you know. How many? Three of my sponsees, two grand sponsees are here. So I love you guys so much, and you've helped me. This last year has been a bitch. So, you know, I got 12 sponsees now because of it, you know. Because that's what we do. And, you know, they help me on a daily basis because I force them to call me. And, you know, I said, talk in my ear because I need some other noise. Go. Truly, they've taught me so much. It's crazy. All right, so back to Ottumwa. So I got sober in Ottumwa in a room full of people that I really thought wanted to hang me. You know, it's Iowa. I grew up in Iowa. I grew up with like the little fag sign on my head, and I'm supposed to wrestle and play football, and I was dancing. I was tap dancing at 4. And it was like, it was so wrong. Thank you, David. But these people, I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to a crowd of, it was terrifying to me. It was the Vietnam vets and the bowling alley crowd. And all those people that I was just so afraid of. And they welcomed me. And they, you know, through my sweaty palms and my, you know, mouth, they asked me to come back the next day. You know, keep coming back. It was simple as that. And I chose to, for some reason, on a daily basis. And they saved my life, those people. They're the ones that taught me about the WE program, because it doesn't, you know, it's really about the principles. And I didn't get sober in gay AA, so, and thank God, because I would have been way too distracted. It would have been, you know, I was like the drink, drug, sex, pass out guy. And that was my 24/7 road trip that I took. I started drinking and, well, drinking first and then using at the age of 14, you know, keggers, you know, by the creek and the cornfields. We'd put up pup tents and look at Playboy magazines and get drunk. But that was the beginning for me, and I knew right off the bat, even before I started drinking, I was terminally unique. I was really special. I was an angel. I was the perfect child. And this is all in my head, you know. I was one of seven children from an Irish, Italian, Catholic family in the Midwest. And the thing is, you know, nothing fancy went on in my family, you know. I had good parents. I had, you know, all the siblings were within 10 years of each other. So it was tight family, tight group. But, you know, I was not the regular boy in the Midwest. I can wrap a pretty package, you know, at the age of 5. And they thought that peculiar. He's strange. So, here's the thing. I knew like my dance ability was a gift from God, because it was natural to me. And growing up in that environment, I knew that there was something, it seemed true and authentic to me. However, because I started to have feelings of being gay, and I knew as a 7-year-old that all dancers were gay, that I could not be a gay person. So I drank, and when I drank, I could act somehow more like the straight friends I had, and I could fit into that world. It was such a great lubricant, because it just made me fit into whatever situation I was in. And, you know, I mean, that's in its simplest terms, that's kind of how it all started with for me. The idea of not being able to stop once I started kicked in, you know, shortly after that. But it was really about, you know, I drank to get drunk, to have sex, and then to forget. I loved the forgetting part. I became really good at forgetting what happened the night before. And I did that by behaving, you know, way on the other end of the scope. I was really, really good during the daylight hours. And that was that's how I got kicked off. I knew I was an alcoholic when I lied about getting hepatitis when I was in college and told my parents it was from the cafeteria food, and they believed it. You know, I was one of those. I was just really willful. I could be really, really ill, and I would self-diagnose. And I would crawl in a hole somewhere and just like hide it out or just kind of sweat it out or do whatever it was. I just didn't want to be accountable for anything. And that's kind of how I lived my life. I had dreams as a 7th grader. I wanted to be, my government teacher took me to my first Broadway show in Iowa City, Iowa. And that was 1977. So I went to see a chorus line from the balcony in the top corner of the balcony, and I saw that show, and it changed me. I was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. But I can't. I'm from, like, wrestling town, you know? And my dad doesn't talk to me, so I don't know, you know, how I'm going to work this out. So I get out of high school, and I have to get away. You know, I was a mover guy. I like to move around a lot in my drinking. So I went to Iowa City, I went to the University of Iowa for a year, and then dropped out to join a dance company in Chicago, and I'm getting my dancing skills up to par, and I'm thinking, I just want to go to Broadway, that's my big dream, I want to be on Broadway. But I had this other thing going on with my drinking and my drugging, and it just, it started to be more important. It was much more important to me. So my dreams of going to New York turned into, well, that's the other thing. Once I got good at anything, I got tired of it. I got bored really fast, and I needed to switch it up. So I wanted to go to New York, so I moved to California. And I went to Santa Maria, California, to PCPA Theater Fest. And I thought, okay, now I want to be more than just a dancer. So I want to sing and I want to act. So I went through their program, and then they offered me to be the resident choreographer and to act in the ensemble. And I'm like, this is really cool, but I really want to go to New York. So I moved to Chicago, and I wanted to become like a serious actor then. So then it was like, okay, I'm going to go be a really serious actor. Forget the dancing and the singing. I'm going to act. So I went to the Goodman School in Chicago. They bumped me up a year because I was so good. And then I graduated in 3 years. But I didn't really graduate, but that's what I told people. I worked in a bar called Berlin in Chicago. I knew I'd seen some of you before. And that was my home. Berlin was my home. And, you know, it took precedence over school. You know, like when the guy that trained me at work went home for Christmas one day or one year, and this was in the mid 80s, and we get a phone call saying that he had died of AIDS at home. And this was the first person I'd ever known to have, contracted the disease. And, you know, it was still kind of new. And for somebody like me, okay, I say this all the time, but it's true. It's like, I didn't get to know people very well. It's like, if I knew your last name, I wasn't going to sleep with you. I just needed first names, maybe. And those were kind of like my, you know, those were my physical contact people, and that was it. But I was socially, from the outside, it looked like everything was great with me. But I really did compartmentalize everything. And so Michael goes home, and he dies, and that hit me. And, you know, also when you're drinking and using, I don't know how to handle any feelings that I have, because I can't identify one, not one. So I knew, you know, I took that information, it hit me really hard. I crashed and burned at work, so my solution is give me a hit of ecstasy, let's drink all night before I have to be at class at 9 in the morning. You know, it's that kind of thinking. And that turned into, oh my God, I have a final in World Civ in like 3 hours. And it's like the big one. It's the big one for the grade for graduating kind of thing. And I'm like, fuck. So my head, because of the way I think, I take it into my teacher and I say, my lover just died of AIDS. And I can't take this test today. Do you understand? Can you understand? And I give him the cries, and, you know. And the sick part about it is that I believed all of it. I believed it. Whatever I needed, I manipulate, I lie, I cheat, I'll steal, just to get me, you know. It's like Nurse Jackie. Are you guys watching that? Anybody watch Nurse Jackie? She's cunning, baffling, and powerful. I love her. I love her. But that's how I was, or am. I don't know, you know. I don't know that I really changed so much. I just have tools not to react or react to the stuff that in the way that I used to. You know, I have tools to take an opposite action, you know. So I didn't graduate. You know, I didn't have that class fulfilled. But I told people I did, including my family, everybody. I walked that walk in that gown with nothing in that thing. Empty. But, you know, it's all about the show. So I get out of school and I'm like, I'm going to Broadway. I want to go to Broadway. So I moved to California again. And because somebody asked me if I wanted to be in a chorus line, I was like, yeah, but I haven't danced in 3 years. So I'll go to L.A. first and I'll dance for a month and then I'll go do this. So I go to L.A. I'm at the... Apache bar in the valley. I meet a boy on the dance floor. He gives me a hit of ecstasy. I move in with him. He turns out to be a meth dealer. I'm home. I lost tons of weight, you know. I got trimmed down. I went to one dance class. In that, my well, I was at the Pro, but I wasn't giving you any tendus or anything. So, you know, I mean, this cycle goes on. This is what it was like for me. And, it, you know, I tried to keep, and not to mention the fact that I never had protected sex. I had no self-esteem in that. Like I said, I could put it in a compartment that said, you know, that's just me at those hours, you know, but look at all the good stuff I do, you know. So it was really confusing, to say the least, but it was, I worked it the best I could. And, you know, as time goes on, it gets a little more sloppy, and you lose the car, you misplace the car, like in a different city. You know, on a night off of doing a show, I started putting just a little sprinkle of meth into my Mountain Dew before I did a chorus line. Just a little bit. And, you know, it became, you know, I was in the air. I was like, da 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 da. And I'm like up in the air in the ballet combination. I'm not coming down. And it's like, wow. The director would be like, what's with the your this face you're doing? I was like, you know, it's my choice. That's the choice I'm making. I like it. But all of that stuff started to get really comfortable and normal for me. And then, of course, you put me in another show with somebody who's the Lola I did Damn Yankees with in Phoenix, because I wasn't in New York yet. I went to Phoenix after California. And she's drinking. The old booze hound is like drinking up before Act Two starts, where we have to do the, you know, mambo number. And she was so drunk, and I was so... I was befuddled by her choice of drinking alcohol while she was on stage. I mean, that's the guy that I became, you know. It was really... And then I was like tired of this. Let's just cut out the show business part and just go to what I really want to do. So I had a friend who was a nurse who was my crystal dealer. And he was my nurse, Jackie. And he introduced me to this guy who ran an escort service. And I was like, cool. This is going to work out really well. So... I go and I have, and he says, oh, Tom, be careful because this guy's HIV positive. And I said, okay. So I go and I meet with this man to audition for him. And during my audition, I look down, he looks up, and there's blood everywhere. On his mouth, on me, it was just, and there was just a brief second of like, and then we burst into laughter. Cleaned up in the sink and went right back at it. And that's where my drinking and using took me, I guess. I mean, it didn't look bad to me. It just seemed like we had a little mess and we had to clean it up. So the meth brought me down much faster had I just been drinking this whole time, clearly. A lot of us have that experience. But I ended up stuck in a corner of a room for about 8 hours, frozen, and just moving really, really fast on the inside. And I just didn't know. I was ready to die. I just wanted to die. And for some reason, I got up. I got up the next day, and, you know, my best thinking is, you need to go get tested finally, you know, because you have to know. This not knowing now is like you've self-diagnosed yourself as being positive for 5 or 6 years now. Every little thing you get on your body is a huge thing inside, but then you just drink more, and it's just like, cuckoo. So I went and got tested, and I came back negative. And I thought, God, is that a second chance for me? And so I decided to move. I went back to my parents' house in Ottumwa, and I continued to drink for 6 more months. And I threw in a tour of the Music Man. It was a bus and truck, though, this time. And so my, you know, what I did was I drove with a really hot truck driver who drives the set. I rode with him at nighttime. So I didn't have to be with all the people. And I could just ride. We got stoned the entire trip from city to city, from Cupertino, California to Utica, New York, in, what, 76 days, and just drunk and stoned the whole time. And I get home, and I finally had a normal night out, and I just got sick and tired of being sick and tired. It wasn't a fancy ending for you. It was a normal night out. It was drinking, sex in a park, and go home. It was that normal night for me. And okay, it was raining, but that was the only other difference about that. So anyway, so I got sober. That's when I got sober in Ottumwa, Iowa. And I was scared. I was so terrified to get one day. Welcome to all you the newcomers in here. You know, what you're going to hear, hopefully. Do I have at least 5 minutes? I'm okay. I got a long time. Super cool. Okay. Because this is the part that is really important for the newcomers to hear, I think. And that is, this is the part where, you know, I had to really kind of turn off my thinker for the rest of my life, but just a day at a time. But this is where I learned to, you know, take direction and to actually take chances at things that I didn't know what the outcome was going to be or what the result was. And not just like, well, if you take white paint and throw it on the wall, you have white paint on the wall. I don't mean things like that. I mean things like, I want you to do something on a daily basis over and over and over again. And don't ask me why, just do it. And I did those things. And things like learning how to say please and thank you to people on a regular basis. Learning how to check in with a sponsor every day. Going through the steps with my first sponsor was remarkable. I was, after my first month of sobriety in Ottumwa, I did a summer stock gig. I was back trying to get back on stage, which is horrible when you're newly sober. And it's like anybody who does a skill drunk and then you try to do it sober, it's freaky. It's just really hard. And especially a career like the one I was in, it's so ego-based. I mean, the ego can be out of control in some cases. To go in and relearn how to do everything that used to be so effortless and you were very sassy with it, it was a challenge. But to go through those things, my sponsor took me through the first 3 steps in Wichita, Kansas. And, you know, after doing the first step, which was a lot of writing about powerlessness and unmanageability, and also about how much money I spent from the first moment I started drinking on drugs and alcohol, how much, I want to see a total. And then to getting into the second step, where I learned how to say please in the morning. When I woke up, I had to just say, please help me stay sober. And at the end of the night, I had to say, thank you for keeping me sober. And I had a really bad God issue because of the Catholic thing. But he taught me that God stood for good, orderly direction. And I could just say good, orderly direction if I wanted to. And that was cool. So I did that. I used HP because it was kind of cool. And but I didn't say God for a long time. Yeah, a long time. So getting into the third step, I got to learn how to create my own higher power. And that was amazing because he just had me make a list of characteristics, of qualities that I admired. And it could be anything I wanted, not just qualities, but things that I loved. So I was like, you know, loving, humble, intelligent, Tama Finland. Green, the ocean. I had all kinds of shit on this list. Anything that made me go, yes, you know, anything. So I had this huge, this paper full of these things, and he had me draw a box on the inside of it, and then I would write words, characteristics that I didn't care for that kind of made me go, you know. So I had all these words on the inside of the box. And he goes, now put your name and God on the outside of the box. And I said, okay. And I said, now what? And he goes, there's your higher power right there. And I was like, oh, wow. You mean like Tom of Finland? I can have Tom of Finland in my God category? And he was like, yes, why not? I was like, okay, cool. So it became very personalized to me, not to you or what you thought would be good for me or whatever, what I think you would think I would, none of that. Just really what's authentically my attraction for it, like boom. So that became my best secret buddy, that idea right there. And that was my private buddy, and like I could go to that buddy all day long, anytime, whenever, and that buddy was there for me, had my back all the way through it. So that was a great lesson, a great lesson. And he would also call and say, if I'm struggling with something, he'd be like, are you living on the inside of the box or the outside of the box? And I said, oh, curses. Drats. Foiled again. So, and I got to say, oh, so here I am at 4 months of sobriety, and I finally listened to somebody who says, Tom, you're good enough to go to New York. I'm like, so I sold my car. I had a place to stay for 30 days because I learned from you people, it's a day at a time. Just go do one thing at a time. So I moved to New York. I had a place to stay. I went to a meeting every day. I got a sponsor in New York who told me to make as many lists as I wanted to because I was a very busy, you know, person coming down. So he said, that's great, but you can only do 3 things a day, and one of them has to be a meeting. And already, you know, I learned how to walk slower in New York, which is still kind of fast, but slower. I humbled myself by, I auditioned with all the 16-year-old girls to be on dance scholarship at Steps, you know, and so I could clean toilets and wash mirrors and floors for free dance class. I did that. I was 29 years old. I was friggin' old, but I went anyway. And then I would show up to casting calls, you know, or those big cattle calls where there's a million people at those things. And go to the audition, no. Go to the audition, no. Go to the audition, no. Go audition for Susan Stroman, and yes. She gave me a yes. I got into a friggin' show in New York, and I was like, whoa. And I ended up dancing and singing and acting on Broadway for 5 years. And I did like Miss Saigon and Beauty and the Beast and Carnegie Hall. And I had this amazing first 5 years of sobriety living my dream. My dream. And it didn't fix me. That's the best part. It truly is the best part. Because if that fixed me and I just kind of stayed and lived that, you know, I'd be so limiting myself to what I have. I mean, I'm 18 now. You know, I was 5 then and I thought I had arrived. You know, my life is fulfilled. Well, guess what? It just keeps shifting. Stuff changes. The road goes... So I move. What I was lacking was intimacy with human beings. I didn't have that. That first 5 years was all about me. Me in therapy. I was going to therapy with Sue Haven. That was her name for my first, year 1 through 5 in New York once a week was Sue. And still going to a meeting every day. And that helped me because she, you know, spin the wheel of feelings. I couldn't identify them until I got to Sue. And I finally put my trust in somebody else and we kind of worked through some of that stuff. Some of there was molestation in my background when I was a kid. There's some, you know, some nasty stuff, but, you know, I got to work through some of that stuff. But it was all about being able to become more authentic and more intimate with people. So I happened to meet somebody. We had a 3-month phone relationship, and which I'd never done with a man. I mean, that was retarded, right? I hadn't had sex with him. So I started the relationship in a completely different way. And I kind of got into my heart. So we thought we'd give it a shot. So I moved to California, and we made up a one-year contract. And so we had like, okay, we're going to do this for 1 year. The only rule is you can't leave for one full year. Oh, that's tricky for an alcoholic. But it's brilliant because I know how to like check out. I can see you have a character defect and I'm out of here. I know how to do that. What I don't know how to do is to go, you're irritating the hell out of me because you're this and you're that and the other. And then learn how to go, oh, wait, I have a part in there somewhere. So maybe I have some of those character defects too. I've got to figure out what those are. And then I've got to find out what my part is. And then I have to make amends for my part. And then I can get back to loving you after the forgiveness happens. What a gift. That was a huge lesson for me to learn in that 1 year. And we worked that 1 year for 10 years, almost 10 years we were together. We did it year after year after year. And then it went bad. So we went our separate ways. You know, this has been an adventure. Now, what I haven't mentioned at all is about love and service in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous from the time I got sober, and especially but since the time I got to Los Angeles. When I got to Los Angeles, you know, I'd been on Broadway, and now I'm a primary caregiver to my lover's best friend, Alexis, who is dying of AIDS. So I went from that to something completely different. And I took care of Alexis 24/7 for about 10 or 11 months. And I got the opportunity to hold his hand when he passed. And I'm the guy that doesn't get close to people. Because of sobriety, when he was on the morphine drip, and you know his eyes, he was blind, but he was staring up at the ceiling, and I'm alone with him all day long, I put on his favorite Bob Dylan album, because he had albums, and I played his favorite song, and one tear came right down his face, like this. And it's not about me. This is not about me. This part's about like, oh my God, I paid attention enough to another human being to know that that song meant something to him. And I didn't know what kind, you know, if he was experiencing any of it. But when I saw the teardrop, I was like, that's amazing. That was a gift. That was a huge gift. Those are God shots to me. But I got to hold his hand when he passed, and that changed my life forever after he went. A lot of stuff shifted in my life. I stopped, you know, I didn't want to be on stage or on TV or film anymore. I moved into directing and choreographing and teaching. And this is like all about being on a path, you know. It's all about being seeking. It's the 11th step. We seek through prayer and meditation. But we're also seeking, like, in our daily existence, you know, through the whole shebang. So I started working in these. They'd asked me to direct a fundraiser show for AALA and do a little fundraiser play. So I took what I knew and I threw shit together. You know, I put, like, Sound of Music and West Side Story together. And I made a one-hour show and the Sound of West Side Music. And it was like the Nuns of the Sacred Sharks and the Von Jets. And Quesadilla, I found him early on in sobriety, and I was like, you are Maria. And it's brilliant. But I had so much joy, and we collectively had so much joy bringing laughter. Oh, thank you very much.
Of course.
Good grand sponsee. Oh, that's so stupid. I don't know why I said that. Thank you, lad. So I got to bring what I knew to the table and help people who were afraid to be in front of other people on stage or whatever, or teach them how to dance. I got so much joy out of that, and I got so much from being able to be of service that way. And that led to like doing, you know, the Battle for the Tiara that turned into Best in Drag Show fundraiser that we do for Aid for AIDS. I directed that and produced that for 8 years, you know. And this last year has been, this is the downer, so, oh, well, no, it's not a downer. But this last year for me has been a year of betrayal, just betrayal across the board. I mean, from old friends to new lovers to Aid for AIDS, you know, everybody, it was just like, okay, Aid for AIDS cut me loose. The last boyfriend lied a lot. The proverbial best friend that I've had for years in AA, lied by omission. That's so stupid. It doesn't matter. The fact is, I felt really betrayed by a bunch of different experiences, one right after another, and it forced me to get close to God, like closer to my God, and closer to my higher power, and to let go of a lot of my old ideas and stuff that just wasn't working anymore. Oh, thank you. So what I found was, you know, when I'm terrified of new stuff, I don't want new people, I don't want new, no, don't get me new. But it's in the letting go that I'm getting a chance to experience some new stuff. And it's not about finding perfection in these things, it's just about showing up and letting it kind of, let it be. Just let it be. I was telling my sponsor the other day, I was like, I invited one of my friends down and he's trying to graduate from get his master's next month. You know, it's right at the end of his year. And he's really irritating me. And I don't know if I want him down here because he's going to really, like, bum me out. And my sponsor said, can you just let him be? So I did, and then his computer crashed and he couldn't come. So it worked out perfect. I am so much better off when I'm not in charge, you know? I really am. And the more I stay sober, the more I get it. I get it. Just, it's like, let each other be. You know, I don't need to fix any of you, you know? And I'll take some time in Al-Anon. I don't know why we all don't go out to Al-Anon. It's like we're sitting in a room full of drunks all the time. It doesn't make sense to me why we wouldn't be like, no is a complete sentence, you know? That's a good one to learn. Anywho, I digress. I am so filled with gratitude and joy, and being able to experience this weekend with you all, it's been nothing but a lot of great moments already since I've been here, and I look forward to meeting and visiting with more of you, and you know, spending some time together, and I'm just so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wish everybody a slow recovery, because they told me that when I got here, and you know, I hope you all get off your own backs, and you know, jump on somebody else's. No. Anyway, thank you very, very much for my sobriety.